Welcome back, friends. So, okay, so we were talking about we're wrong. So, knowing the opposite virtue to the vice, that's one. Two, figuring out what our best virtue is and just really play to our strength. That happened, actually. So, my second one went to a Christian college. And in their freshman year, many years ago, I don't know if they even still do that now, they had the students really take a careful look at what their strengths were and their weaknesses. And they were going to do that same concept. We're going to play to your strengths, minimize the weaknesses. Okay. So chapter six, we're still on Father McElhorn's book here. Considers the chief vices and their daughters, because as the virtues have derivation, so do the vices. They're called capital because they engender other sins, and other vices. And they are pride, avarice, greed, envy, wrath, lust, gluttony, and sloth. And I think we said that in an earlier show. Mm-hmm. Contrary to the virtues, which the catechism defines as a habitual and firm disposition to the good. And so I, for completeness here, I have listed them. Prudence, justice, temperance, and courage, or fortitude, along with the three theological virtues of faith, hope, and charity. Consider those as the seven. And so Father McElhorn says, all projects need direction, order, and a plan. The goal, so what is the goal here, right? We're back to we're at the beginning of the year. What is our goal? Our goal is to ascend Mount Carmel. That's just the another way to say the kingdom of heaven. And Father McElhorn gives direction, order, and a plan, which each of us can personalize by identifying our own predominant fault. Yes, I was going to, do you want to say something there? I'm going to go into pride as an example, but.
Well, I mean, one of the things that I do think is so interesting, right, is there's a book that was written by Chesterton, which might be one that that we might want to engage with, but, you know, it's called What's Wrong with the World, right, or something like that. And I just think that it in a world of such, I don't know, it's astounding to me that we can be, well, I guess it's the counterfeit of introspection is narcissism, right? So people have never thought more about themselves ever, I think, in the history of the world, really. I mean, I'm hard pressed to think that anybody could ever have lived in a society, maybe Sodom and Gomorrah, but that would have been localized, right, to one location, very, very small location. But like you're talking about these counterfeits, really, because I do think that these root sins, these capital sins, are counterfeited virtues, right? I mean, they're so closely resonant to the good that people who are not aware, it's like the concept of pleasure, seeking pleasure for itself instead of, you know, I'm trying to think of how Socrates says it, where it's never the true good is never seeking, like you don't just walk around for the sake of walking around, or you don't do an action for the sake of the action. You do the action for the sake of what the action is going to bring you, right? So I don't just walk and walk and walk and walk and walk. I mean, anybody who just walked and walked and walked and walked and walked would be crazy. They would never be virtuous. But the person who walks, you know, a mile to bring food to the hungry, right? The walking is the action that you had to go through to get there. And I think that we have sort of a similar thing that's going on now, that people have lost sight of the telos. We've talked about this a lot, and they are stuck in the means. And that narcissism is really, I think in some ways, narcissism must be the counterfeit of of an introspective life, right? Because people, like I said, we're obscenely obsessed with ourselves. And we have no virtue.
That's right. That's right. All right, my friends, I'm going to see how quickly we can do the chief vice, common to many. Some list it as the sin which caused Adam and Eve and the fall of the angels, and it is pride. So let's just give a little look at pride, shall we? Pride makes the self, and here's Sarah exactly right, the predominant master, narcissism. It is the God for whom ordinary actions are performed. Pride is the source of wrong in many ordinary actions. The slight irreverence, the lack of meekness, the vainglory without number, the distracted self-centered prayer, right? We're praying and we're thinking about ourselves and what we got to do. Desire for praise by others. Pride is a complete or partial forgetfulness of God. It has a false regard for the opinion of others. It is excessive self-love. And there are different types of pride. And it's with prudence and grace to know these things, right? It takes prudence to understand that there are these different types, and it takes grace to know them. Pride of authority or superiority, an overbearing attitude, a willingness to win an argument at all costs, a critical attitude. You know, when the argument has long been done and we're still at it. Pride of timidity, a self-love manifested by shyness, backwardness, or cowardice. So that doesn't seem prideful by being shy. However, the soul is protecting the self through hiding of weaknesses for fear of ridicule. And it carries that reserve to excess. So that's where prudence, we always need prudence. We always need the grace, the light of Christ. Pride of sensitivity. It's a self-love being wounded. The sensitive person is quickly hurt. The sensitive person is the cause to a great extent of his own unhappiness, which is back to, right, what we're wanting is a holy, happy, healthy new year. Right. Sometimes this pride of sensitivity, he gets malicious joy out of the sensitivity. And he pulled down, or she pulls down, the morale of the house. You know, back to that, whatever the problem is. And then there's pride of complacency or vanity, where it demands the esteem of others. It craves the good opinion of others, and so providing a false moral conduct. So, you know, you can do good, but the good is to, all right. This is a concept that Dan Burke made, and it's true. Good does not solve the problem of sin. I'll repeat that. Good doesn't solve the problem of sin. And this is why. Because the good is done for the esteem of others, not for the glory of God. And the person who is living in mortal sin, who does good, gets their reward. It's just not necessarily from God. They're getting it from fellow creatures. And that's where it comes in here, pride of vanity. Often virtue, right? What was that phrase we have? Virtue signaling.
Yeah.
Right? That's this. Yes, virtue is the practice for the opinion of others and not God. And there's a tendency to, so here's where the other sins start to come in, because when you have this pride of vanity, or we tend to compare ourselves, of course, in a superior motive, such as a narcissist. Well, sloth comes in that way. Because the minute I start comparing myself to my neighbor, well, I can find all kind of neighbors to justify me staying where I am. That's not the measure. The measure is Christ.
Right.
That's our measure. And so, and then there's, yes, tendency to get involved with, here was one. So there's a tendency to get involved with devotions that attract the attention of others. You would think devotions in and of itself, which, but that motivation.
It comes to the fact that always one has to be cognizant of the fact that man sees the actions, but God sees the heart. Always.
Always.
And that's why the disposition of the virtue, right, has to flow first from the interior. It must come from the interior. And I think, you know, it is well to point out, you know, those varying stages where, you know, recognizing that the virtuous person is the one who does good and gets happiness from it. Because you had pointed out that there's the person who can do good, right, but doesn't really get any spiritual happiness from it. You know, maybe they get some kind of pleasure from it, but they're not doing it because it's good. You know, there might be some underlying reason why they're doing it. Maybe they're too proud to do the bad, or maybe they're looking for the praise of others, right? And we would call those people the continent people, right? They still do the good. It's better to do the good. Always, always better to do the good than to do evil. But it's not virtuous, right? There, so you can, one can do good and not be virtuous. That's, and then right, you have the people who do the bad thing, right? They eat the extra apple, they steal the $5, they do all the little bad things, but yet there's something within them that calls them to shame. And that little bit of shame will be their salvation, right? Because they have to acknowledge that they've done something wrong, because there's an unsettling in their soul. And those would be the people who are incontinent, right? And then finally, you have the people who are truly vicious. And we have to assent to the fact that these people truly exist, that they do evil and they get joy from it. And it seems
not only, and they have now called that viciousness good.
Yes.
They go the extra step.
Right. Yes. And it's incredible that we must be aware of these different stages of the life within grace, that one truly can do evil things and get some type of benefit from it. I mean, you know, people steal all the time. I mean, look at the situation that's going on in Georgia. I mean, this woman, you know, who set herself up as the greatest judge and condemner of, you know, the particular president that we had that she didn't like. And now, my, you know, how crazy it is. You know, you were in an adulterous affair. Not only were you in an adulterous affair, you took money and you paid it to this adulterous lover so that you could pay for trips to take yourself out. I mean, and she did all those things, and she got pleasure from doing them. You know, and I mean, the worst thing for her, right, would have been to not get caught, right? I mean, that would have been the worst possible thing for her. But the reality is, she had no other thought than herself when she was doing those things. And we have to be aware of the fact that if she could do something like that, so could you, so could I, right? I mean, it's not the person who is closest to grace, right? The person who keeps themselves close to confession and to the sacraments likely may never, hopefully, please God, never fall into true viciousness, right? But, you know, you may eat, I don't know. I mean, we'll say eat the apple, just because it's a good way of pointing out the fact that, you know, you can do the bad thing and still feel remorse for it. I mean, and that's the hope. My goodness, please God, save us from never not feeling shame.
Yes. Let's pick up. We'll pick up in the next episode. Till then, my friend, Fide Sriracha.